Hey, welcome to the Manga Log Podcast. This is a weekly manga podcast where I just introduce a new series each week. I was going to go into the whole spiel, but I screwed up recording this so many times, so I'm just going to get straight into it. My name is John. I am the host of the podcast. I welcome community participation in any forms. If you want to read along with me, I announce the series at the end of the episode. If you've read the series beforehand, you can message me your own thoughts, like some of the listeners already have, and then maybe recommend a manga for the show for me to check out and introduce to the rest of the listeners. And also, I'm also taking suggestions for the format of the show. I'm 26 episodes in right now. I've been keeping it pretty simple, but if you guys have any ideas, maybe about how I could go about revisiting manga, because the idea is to tackle a brand new series each week, so that no matter what, you can pick up an episode. You don't have to worry about skipping an episode because you haven't watched it or something. I try to make it as accessible as possible, but I don't know what format, maybe like a bonus episode or something, but I would like to try to figure out some other things to add to the show, just so, so it doesn't stay boring. Unless you guys like the simple format, one series each week, that's fine. But I'm welcome to ideas. I do have some other ideas, but they're like kind of big, and like I don't want to force them into the podcast. I'm thinking about, I don't know how well this would, how feasible this would be, but like having a second show for some of the other ideas that I have. But I gotta think about it a little bit more first, and I gotta make sure I'm consistent about getting this show out, which so far I have been, so I'm hoping to keep it that way. But anyways, I have some shout-outs. I have a new follower on Twitter. That brings me to 28 followers. I mean, that's a small number in comparison to a lot of other people, but I'm pretty excited. So that is YunSaint7. It's not spelled the way I just said it. It's just that's the best way I thought to pronounce it based on what it was, the way it's spelled. And yeah, that's on Twitter. Thank you very much for the follow. I hope you're enjoying the show. And then also, I was browsing the Apple Podcast store, I guess, the other day. And it's not really a store, but... I just searched manga. I searched some keywords just to see how I ranked a comparison, or like if I came up on the feed. And I did see my podcast. I also happened to notice that I had... 2 5-star reviews, which I did not, Apple doesn't really alert you about that, so I'm sorry if you reviewed me a while ago and I just never noticed, but that was pretty exciting. You don't always see that first, because I think in order for Apple to show the number of reviews the podcast has, like in order for them to give you an average, you have to have at least 5 reviews. So right now I have 2, so it didn't pop up right away, but now, but I did notice when I was looking up in the store, and then I clicked on my show, and I scrolled down, and it says I have 2 reviews, which was pretty freaking cool. They were just ratings, which is fine. I appreciate whether you want to leave a rating, or a review, you want to write down specific things you like about the show or dislike. I'm all for it, but whoever you 2 people are, thank you very much for dropping those 5 stars on me. Really appreciate it. Yeah, and if you don't happen to notice when you're searching the source, because it needs at least 5. If I can get at least 5 reviews, I would be happy, because that will display my average on the store. And, I don't really, like, plug for reviewers or, like, ask for them all the time. I figured if you enjoy the show, then, you'll go out, if you really wanted to, you'd go out of your way to leave me a review. And also, I'm pretty hypocritical when it comes to that, because there's a lot of podcasts I listen to, and like, it's like, I need to drop them a review. Sometimes when I'm feeling motivated, I'll write a podcast review. Other times I just leave them a 5-star rating. I think either or helps, really. Somebody notices, like, wow, they got, there's 3 written reviews, but then there's like 12 ratings and they're 5 stars. So, it encourages people to, it kind of draws people's eyes to the show, and encourages them to, like, better incentivizes them to give the show a shot. If they notice, hey, it's got an average of 5 stars out of, so and so many reviews. So let me give that a shot. So thank you very much again. This is episode 26. The series I'm covering this week is Fruits Basket. Apologies for the background noise. That is my dog. Daisy, what are you doing? It's Fruits Basket, written and illustrated by Natsuki Takaya. That's her pen name. I don't know what her real name is, but I'm assuming she wants to keep that private, so even if I knew it, I guess I wouldn't share it. She made her debut in 1992, but she really hit it big with Fruits Basket, and this was in 1998. This is Fruits Basket has had a series of licensing Shenanigans. I think initially it was licensed by Tokyopop, but recently it was re-licensed by Yen Press, and they re-released it in 12 omnibuses. So that's like two volumes a piece. But originally in Japan, it published it in 23 volumes. And I think this is the same for the Tokyopop release, it's 23 volumes, about 136 chapters. The manga ran from, it was serialized in the Hana to Yume magazine. I brought that up in my Yona of the Dawn episode. It's a shoujo magazine in Japan. It ran from 1998 to 2006, so it is a complete series. It did have an anime adaptation. I think it was Studio Deen, I might be wrong. But it came up with an anime original ending. It never adapted the full manga. Now, though, there is a series airing this season that's going to be adapting the entirety of the story. I think the studio for that is TMS Entertainment. So, yeah, that's pretty exciting. Part of the reason why I wanted to check out the manga is because I do plan on watching that, that, you know, I guess, what do you call it? A reboot or a remake? Or just a readaptation, I guess, I don't know, of that Fruits Basket, of the Fruits Basket manga. So that's pretty exciting. Genres for this are comedy, drama, romance, school, and supernatural. So it does take place in modern-day Japan, but the supernatural aspect I'll get into later. So we have an orphan girl named Toru Honda, who through a variety of circumstances finds herself living alone in a tent in the woods. After a landslide destroys her home, she's discovered by the young men who own the property that she's, you know, camping out on. They open up their home to her until she can get her whole living situation arranged. Needless to say, she ends up staying with them pretty much permanently. I don't know. I haven't read to the end of the series, but she's with them for a good chunk of this story. So it's there that she discovers that these residents have a terrible secret. they are cursed, and if they are embraced by a member of the opposite sex, they transform into animals of the Chinese zodiac. Now, I'm not sure where the Chinese zodiac is a real thing, a real legend, but I don't know if the transforming into animals thing is unique to this story. I'm assuming it is, but it basically follows Toru living in this house, keeping this family's curse a secret. And, you know, just learning more about each member of the house and how the curse has impacted them. And really on like a psychological level, a lot of these, the residents of this house that are cursed, are dealing with some, issues, and Toru is doing her best to help them through their issues. So considering the setup, okay, so you've got like this, you know, high school girl living alone with a bunch of dudes, and later they reveal there's some other, obviously more members of the zodiac, and of course they're not all guys, so, but for the most part it's a lot of dudes and one girl. This is like prime, you know, fertile ground for like a reverse harem show. Thankfully it's actually really wholesome so far. I really enjoy the dynamic the characters share. I really love Toru. She is a great protagonist. She comes from really humble origins. She's an orphan. You know, part of the reason why she was living in a tent in the woods is because she didn't want to burden anyone. She didn't want to like disappoint her other family member or something like that. I can't remember what the excuse was for like her family, why she wasn't living with, like, you know, I know she was originally going to live with her grandfather, and like I guess the house was being renovated or something like that. So instead of staying with one of them, she just decided to secretly camp out in the woods, which is kind of concerning because like if her other members of her family knew that, well, one, I don't think they would have allowed her to do that. And two, if they didn't know she was doing that, like where the heck is she, you know? But it's kind of like one of those suspend your disbelief things. The author does try to do, Takaya, she does try to do a good job of kind of justifying why she's living in the woods. But I really like Toru because, you know, she doesn't want to burden anyone, and she makes the best of what she has. So she's living in this tent in the woods and going to school and everything. Don't ask me how she showers or anything like that. Not sure. Even when she's taken in by this family of, you know, these cursed individuals, she's initially against it because she feels like she's freeloading. So she does a lot to like earn her keep. She's very respectful of the guys that are living there and does her best to help them. And the same generally, vice versa, it's the same for her. So there are a few guys that are introduced in the beginning. We have, these are like the core characters, I guess. We have Kyo. He is the cat in the Chinese zodiac. Actually, he's not official member of the zodiac, which is, there's a whole story behind that legend why the cat isn't included. Apparently the rat tricked the cat. So he's like the hothead. He's constantly picking fights with Yuki, who is the rat of the Zodiac, because of the whole legend. So these characters are familiar with the legend of the Chinese Zodiac, how they ended up being cursed and you know, each becoming, you know, quote unquote members of the Zodiac. Not sure yet. That's yet to be revealed where I am reading. But we have Yuki. He's the calm and collected one. He's got like feminine features. He almost looks like a girl. He's a little, I wouldn't say antisocial, but he's like reserved. And it seems like he, no matter what Kyo does, he can't beat Kyo. I mean, he can't beat Yuki when it comes to anything. He's always besting, Yuki's always besting Kyo. So they're pretty big rivals in the story, and almost to an exaggerated degree where they're just like sparring in the middle of the house, destroying something. And then we have Shigure. He is like the adult in the establishment. He's like the, I wouldn't say father because he's probably too young to be considered like a father figure, but he's like the wise older brother. And he's pretty cool. I just haven't learned too much about him. It seems like Kyo and Yuki are the focus. I think they're setting up Kyo to be like the love interest for Toru. She's a very big fan of the Chinese Zodiac legend, specifically the cat in the legend, because she kind of empathizes with the cat in the legend, how he, how the cat wasn't, you know, basically isn't accepted into the Zodiac because, well, it was tricked, but also just the idea of it not being accepted as part of the Zodiac. She empathizes with that because as a kid, she used to get picked on, and she never quite fit in. And she said if she was to be a cat, you know, if she was to be a member of the Zodiac, she would love to be a cat. So she, just the fact that Kyo is the cat is just fascinating to her. And, you know, she already takes a liking to him because of that, because she empathizes with his struggle, despite the fact that he's not super social in the beginning, very just, like, angry and not exactly the nicest person. Like, even when he first sees her in the house, he's like, what the heck is she doing here? You know, she's not, he's not very happy about the idea of her living there at first. But yeah, you meet other people later, but yeah, again, these are like the core. We got Kyo, Yuki, Shigure is kind of like a supporting character, and then of course Toru, the main character. You know, so throughout the story, you just see Toru helping out these guys. The curse has put a lot of stress on them, and Toru is enthusiastically helping them work through their problems. She's kind of like their resident therapist or like mentor, and, you know, but she's still a child. She gets mentored a lot herself by Shigure. As she's learning more about the family and their curse. So a lot of the initial quirks that these characters have, like Kyo's hot-headedness, Yuki and his kind of like anti-socialness, I guess, it's played for laughs at first, but I think Takeda does a really good job of building off of their personality traits. You know, Kyo spars with Yuki a lot of time. It's supposed to be funny that it's exaggerated. They have like this cartoonish rivalry going on, but, you know, he's really he's got some deep-seated issues. And he's taking it out on Yuki. And Yuki, he looks like he has everything together. In fact, in school, he's likened to a prince. A lot of girls fawn over him. But he has really big issues with being social with other people. Part of the reason is the curse is kind of holding him back from really being just really being openly friendly and things like that. One of the plot points is that Yuki mentions, I think Toru, somebody mentions that Yuki could have just gone to an all-guys school and he wouldn't have to deal with the paranoia of, you know, being embraced or something by a female that's confessing to him or something like that, you know. But his thing is, like, he's purposely trying to better himself. So he puts himself in a co-ed school because he doesn't want this curse to hold him back from living a normal life. So these guys are trying to work through this curse. It's set up like a gimmick. This definitely has the potential to just be like a gimmick. Oh, you know, it's a haha. They turn to animals, and then when they turn back, they're naked because, you know, they were stripped of their clothes when they turned into an animal. And so, you know, it's funny, you know, but it's deeper than that. This is a hindrance to them. This is like a handicap for them. They're trying to live despite this, live a normal life. There's some bitterness about it. There's some hard feelings, and I don't know the complete background behind the curse, but it does seem like there's this air of, bitterness or like melancholy almost. Yeah, so you know, Kyo, despite being stubborn and angry, he does do his best to change. So the same way Yuki's trying to better himself, Kyo also is trying to take advice, not being so quick to anger and take other people's feelings into consideration more often. So even early on, I'm seeing a lot of growth just from these, just these two guys right here. But I also feel like with Toru, we're gonna get some more growth out of her too. She's grieving. She recently lost her mother at the start of the manga. It's clear that her mother had a profound impact on her, and Toru does base a lot of the decisions she makes off of advice her mother had given her before she died. And again, I feel like the tone of the series is relatively lighthearted right now, but I think I can see potential for things to get more serious as the story progresses. And again, the Chinese zodiac thing is doesn't it could be is you know it's not necessarily just a fun gimmick. I think the curse has a real effect on this family, and I'm curious to just explore it further as I'm going through the story. I did hear that later in the manga the tone kind of changes. It gets a little more mature. And that tells me that these characters are going to grow, which actually has me really excited. It's weird. Despite Fruits Basket's popularity, I kind of missed out on it when I was younger, because I grew up relatively poor, so I wasn't exposed to a lot of this media. So like a lot of shows people grew up with, like Dragon Ball and stuff, I just wasn't part of. And Fruits Basket was one of those like formative series, especially for young girls. And I can definitely see why. It's surprisingly more complex than I thought it was. Even this early on, I see the seeds being sown, and I'm curious to see how, how it bears fruit later on in the series. But to be honest, without going into any like plot specific details, I really don't have much else to say. One thing that might hold some people back, and I do mention this because it is a thing that people consider before they read something. The art isn't great. I have to admit, in fact, like those big shoujo eyes, man. It's not always the most appealing thing. I've gotten used to it already as I've been reading, but it's not the most pretty art style, I guess. It seems like a lot of people are still really huge fans of the series despite that. So it's not like ugly or anything. It's just like not the most beautiful thing in the world. Like I definitely prefer, like the last shoujo series I read was Yuna of the Dawn, and that was just gorgeous. I definitely prefer that over Fruits Basket's art. And there's not, there's just more detail there in general, in the backgrounds and stuff too. With Fruits Basket, there's hardly any backgrounds. But I'm still enjoying it for the character, the writing. The writing is really strong. It's solid. Yeah, I think that is it for this series. Again, definitely enjoying it. Part of it is because I do want to watch the anime, which I think will fix for people that maybe are not a fan of the art style. I think the new adaptation of the manga will encourage people to still check out the series in some fashion. So, yeah, pretty cool. No community feedback this week on Fruits Basket, but next week, let me actually get into that. Next week is Lone Wolf and Cub, and it's written by Kazuo Koike and illustrated by Goseki Kojima. I got the first five volumes of that on an 8R course sale a while back. And I thought with the recent passing of Koike, I thought it would be nice to check out some of his work. I actually wasn't too familiar with him before I heard of his passing, but I did notice that I had already bought in. I already bought in. That's not a word. I've already bought some of Lone Wolf and Cub, so I figured that's now would be a good time to check it out while he's on everyone's minds, So, yeah, I think that'll do it for this episode, guys. Thank you again for the reviews. Thanks for the new follower on Twitter. Yeah, if you have any suggestions about format or maybe like bonus episodes or I don't know, I'm still trying to. I keep thinking I write down all these ideas. I'm just not quite sure how I'm gonna go about executing them, and I want to make sure I'm not biting off more than I can chew. I'm trying to keep the show relatively simple format wise. Yeah, but I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. Thanks again. Catch you guys next week.